Today's first reading is from the second book of Kings. It's Prophet Elisha's story that sets the pattern that we hear in the gospel of Jesus' multiplication of the loaves and the fishes. For there are similarities between the two accounts. In both, barley loaves are used, which is the bread of the poor. It's brought to a man of God, and a large number of people then are fed with just a meager amount of bread, and the people have more than enough to eat with an abundance that is left over. But today the lectionary interrupts the readings in our cycle that we'd had from Mark's gospel. In the next 5 weeks, we'll be hearing from chapter 6 in the Gospel of John, which is known as the Eucharistic Discourse, the Bread of Life Discourse of Jesus. For this miracle of the feeding of the multitudes with a few loaves and fish is the only miracle that's recorded in all four of the Gospels. For this story was cherished by the first Christians for whom the Eucharist was becoming the center of their life together. Jesus' actions are Eucharistic. The bread and the fish is given, and Jesus gives thanks. The Greek word in John's Gospel is Eucharisteo. He breaks that bread and he forms the community then feasting. Now, thankfully, Jesus did not use fish at the Last Supper. I couldn't imagine what that would be like. But the Eucharist makes us companions. The word companus, it means literally with bread, that we become bread sharers. For the multiplication of the loaves and the fish did not start from nothing. Jesus was able to feed these crowds because a young lad was willing to share all he had. From his small gift, Jesus worked a miracle, and a new community of faith was formed as a result. For each one of us is called by Christ to become Eucharist. We receive this at the altar, and we are to take it out from here by giving thanks for what we have received and our sharing of our own gifts, our own talents, our own riches, and ourselves, so that we can work miracles of creating communities of joyful faith. The Eucharist primarily is not a personal, individualistic, solitary meal. There is no Jesus in me spirituality. For the Eucharist forms a community of men and women who are one in what they believe and how they act. But the oneness in faith is only the beginning. How the Christian community acts, that is the challenge. As Pius XII claimed, if you have received worthily, you are what you receive. For the greatest miracle may not be that at the altar the bread and wine are transformed into Christ's body and blood, but that we who receive this body and blood become transformed into Christ ourselves. Which segues to the second reading from Paul's letter to the church at Ephesus. It's a community of faith that's formed around hearing the word of God and in the sharing of the Eucharist, sharing of the bread together. He says, I urge you to live in a manner worthy of the call you have received, with all humility, with gentleness, with patience, bearing with one another through love, striving to preserve the unity of the Spirit through the bond of peace. For St. Paul's words on forming and strengthening the early Christian community in Ephesus clearly speak two principles always to keep in forefront: to live in a worthy manner, to live as being worthy of this Eucharist, and to strive to preserve the unity of the Spirit. It's a concept that we are always striving to fully live in the presence of God, not giving up or giving in or becoming complacent. For foremost, we have then this virtue of humility. Actually, it's a word that the Christian faith coined. For in Greek, there is no word for humility that has not some suggestion of degrading meanness attached to it. Christian humility comes from our self-knowledge. True humility comes when we face ourselves, see our weaknesses, our selfishness, our failure in work, in our personal relationships, and in our achievements. Next, St. Paul calls us to the virtue of gentleness, that wonderful Greek word, praiotes. It means humility, but more so a meekness. Now, when I first heard that word, meekness, years ago, I was quite repelled. It seemed just such like a spineless, wimpy word. Rhymes with weak. I'm the rugby team chaplain. I said, oh, go team, be meek today. It's like, really? But maybe it's a guy thing. I didn't think about being meek was something to feel good about. Certainly not a word worthy of our calling. But studying it further, this gentle meekness is one of the great Greek ethical terms. For Aristotle had a lot to say about the quality of gentleness and meekness. He liked to define every virtue as simply the mean between the two extremes. On the one hand, we have the extreme of excess, and on the other is the extreme of defect. In between is virtue itself. Aristotle further defines meek as being between excessive anger and excessive angerlessness. It's a happy medium between too much and too little anger. But praos has a second usage in Greek. It's the regular word for an animal which has been domesticated, one that has been trained to obey words of command, that has learned to answer to the reins like a horse. For the word for an animal that then has learned to accept control in their life. This is a lesson that we learn from Jesus about conflicts swirling around us that we want to rage against. We need to gain this gentle strength to put on meekness. Think of Mr. Miyagi. What a classic example of being meek until that guy touched his shoulder. Then the virtue came out. For to put on this virtue by learning to rein in our desires to strike out, we then gain a self-control that Jesus exemplifies. Then Paul instructs us to live worthy with this patience, forbearing with one another. Patient bearing, a disposition to bear injuries patiently. It's a forbearance, which means a long suffering, simply to put up with each other. More characteristic of the meaning is called a long temper. We know a lot of people who have a short temper. Well, this is a long temper. The virtue is longanimity, and it has to do especially in relationships, how we have a long temper. It describes a spiritual never give in, which, because it endures to the ends, will reap a reward. St. John Chrysostom defined it as the spirit which has the power to take revenge, but never does so. It's been defined as a spirit which refuses to retaliate against another. When patience is a spirit that never admits defeat, it will not be broken by any misfortunes or sufferings, but by any disappointment or discouragement, it persists to the end. It bears insults. It bears injuries without bitterness, without complaints. It is a spirit which can suffer unpleasant people and graciousness with fools that irritate us. For the thing which best of all gives meaning to that New Testament repeatedly is the use of this long suffering. Is this easy? No. Is it possible? Yes. For embracing the Word of God and being nourished in the Eucharist forms this community of men and women who are companions in what they believe and in how they act. For Jesus transforms people of all ages, of all talents, of all their abilities and backgrounds into a community of generosity. The vision of being a Eucharistic community is recreated each time we gather here around the altar. For the Eucharist is possible only when each self defers to the community, only when serving others is being exalted above being served, only when the differences dissolve and we have in common what we have shared and that it is honored above all else. For receiving the Eucharist nourishes us and sustains us so that we can live in a manner worthy of the call you have received with all humility and with gentleness, with patience, bearing with one another through love, striving to persevere the unity of the Spirit through the bond of Christ's peace.